Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Freakishly Well-Behaved Kids. I'm Dr. Jody Mullen, and this is a podcast about helping parents and other people who are connected to children help children be their best. I've been a counselor and play therapist for almost 30 years and a mom for just over 20, and I'm going to be blending my knowledge and experiences as a parent and as a child mental health professional here in giving you some ideas about lessons you can learn that I have learned also about children, parenting, and cultivating relationships with children. These lessons have informed my parenting, and I believe why, as one of my friends put it, have freakishly well-behaved kids. P.S. They are freakishly well-behaved, except when they are not, of course. Today I get to talk about my favorite subject, which is play therapy. But in this podcast in general, we get at some of the basic and fundamental principles that I've learned from my child clients in play therapy that promote wellness and therefore how they behave. These principles make parenting and parenting less stressful and more joyful. I've whittled down a couple of these basic principles to share them with you, as well as other lessons I've learned or I'm in the process of learning, so you too can benefit and enhance the relationships you have with children and your parenting esteem. For more on parenting and children, check out my book, Raising Freakishly Well-Behaved Kids, that was inspired by thousands of children and the conversations and consultations with parents I have had. You can also find additional resources for parents and professionals on my clinical website, which is just www.integrativecounseling.us. Or hang out with me on social media, on Facebook and at Integrative Counseling, or on Instagram at Dr. Jody Mully. One more thing, when I share stories related to my clinical work, I make every effort to disguise any identifying information, and so any likeness would just be a coincidence. Today, Faye is going to cultivate a conversation. She joins me again, I'm so lucky, using your questions about play therapy. So let's have at it. Faye, what kind of questions do you have about my favorite subject in the world, play therapy?
Sure. Yeah, well, thank you for having me on again. And I figured we could start with the most obvious one. What is play therapy, if you could just give us like a brief definition?
If I could do any of this briefly, that will be the most impressive part. So let me talk a little bit about what play therapy is from like almost from like a parental point of view, because I think that's where we get a little bit tangled up in. It's very intuitive. It makes a whole lot of sense. But I think the way that we think about therapy kind of gets in our way. So let me see if I can make this work. So what you have to believe is something that's an actual fact, which is that play is a way that children, mammals, communicate. It's not just children, humans, but children, mammals communicate. And so in play therapy, what we do is we add in the language of play to the therapeutic milieu. So what I mean by that is that in all of therapy, verbalization is appropriate. So you can talk in therapy. You can make facial expressions in play therapy. You can use your body language in therapy, tone of voice. All of these things are things that typical therapists, whether working with children or adults, take into consideration. In play therapy, we also add in the language of play, and therefore a therapeutic playroom demonstrates that. So therapeutic playrooms have toys and other kinds of things that kids could use in a playful way so that they can communicate to us and with us through their play. I'll say one more thing is that if you have a kid and you've ever watched them play, you know that they're playing out their lives. And so that's what we get to see in play therapy. Make sense?
Yes, definitely. And I think you also basically just answered my second question, which is why would someone want to have kids in play therapy rather than regular talk therapy? Okay. And I'm kind of assuming it's because, like you said, I mean, feel free to elaborate, but I feel like it's, yeah, it's all those reasons you just gave us that mammals in general are expressing themselves through play.
Yes. Well, that, but the other thing is that in play therapy, in addition to that, in play therapy, like just when the child walks into a therapeutic playroom versus like my office that I use with adolescents and adults, it's much more child-centric, right? So it looks like a place where a kid should be. Kids aren't super impressed by like the degrees I have accumulated over the years, like hanging on my wall, or the chairs are the correct size for children. So it's developmentally an appropriate space for kids too, which I think like takes away some of one, the stigma around therapy that children learn from a very young age, but it also makes it super child friendly and inviting to children. So I think that's another reason. I also think that, and again, this is supported in the research literature, is that there's so many things, and we as adults know this, that we can't put into words. There's even way more of experiences like that for children, especially young children. So this gives them an opportunity to not only communicate verbally, but also to communicate through metaphor and symbolism that comes with play. And then I just thought of another good reason, Faye, as I'm like talking about this, and I will absolutely get lost in this conversation because of it is so important to me, and you know, obviously I have a lot of energy to it. But the other thing I was thinking too, and this comes from my own experience as a kid who was in speech therapy until I was in fifth grade, and I was had what would today be called selective mutism, but at the time was called, I was just really, really shy, was that for kids who, for whatever reason, won't or don't speak verbally, it's an alternative for them as well, because there's no pressure on them to have to, as we typically say in dominant United States culture, use your words. So children don't have to speak at all in play therapy, but certainly they can. It's not like that's frowned upon.
Right.
They don't have to. So there's like this off the hook where adults are always trying to, or typically trying to get children to use their words and to talk and to say things, that it, that whole power play is taken out of the equation in play therapy.
Yeah. And other than not, you know, removing the pressure of kids to verbalize, what do you think the other big benefits of play therapy are for kids?
Well, I think it doesn't, like on the surface, it does, it looks a little bit fun. I will assure you that children in play therapy are working hard. It's not just that they may do some things that bring some silliness in or allow their creativity to show. But I think like that, all of those pieces of it are additions to that. And children really do learn through play. So how we learned language even comes through play and interactions related to that. So I think all of that kind of builds in the context of play therapy.
Awesome. And would you say that play therapy is for any kind of child, or is it just someone that's been through some sort of major trauma?
Okay, that's a really good question. So the typical ages where we see play therapy being the right clinical choice, right, the right kind of therapy, so to speak, for children would be between the ages, safely, you can say between 2 and 12. So at the low end of that, first of all, and I know this is hard for people to hear, there are 2-year-olds that need therapy, and it is mostly because of what you just said, Faye. It's mostly because they've been through some traumatic experience, anything from neglect and maltreatment and abuse to being in a a car accident or having a tragic death loss in their family. Anything like that could be a reason a two-year-old would need therapeutic services. Actually, the youngest child I ever worked with in play therapy or in therapy in general was a year and a half. So I worked with an 18-month-old one. And really for children, I would say under the age of four, even children who are super sophisticated in their expressive language and can totally hold a conversation with you, I still think that play therapy is really has to be your primary choice in what you should ask for your kids or what as a professional you're doing for children that young, like preschool age and toddlerhood. When you hit the other age end of the spectrum, that 12-year-old age, mostly you can work with children where you're informed by play therapy and have some play therapy as part of it up until 12. Sometimes I see some of the cis female, the girls that around age 10 start to be ready for a more traditional kind of therapy, but that doesn't mean that we still don't include some play activities or expressive art interventions, other ways that they can express themselves besides verbalizing. And then I would say the other thing is I work with people, I guess like my oldest person right now that I'm working with is almost 70. And I infuse play in all of those relationships because it is symbolic and a metaphor and a way to get at some of the things that we wouldn't typically say or we don't have words for. Okay, but there was another part of your question. So I took that in one direction about age, but I want to take it in another direction too, and that's about like what's going on with the person. So play therapy is actually an evidence-based approach to use with the children who have been traumatized. So certainly trauma. And an evidence-based approach is just a standard in the industry. That means it's been proven through research to work with a certain group of people or a certain population or a certain condition. So play therapy is an evidence-based approach to use with children who have been traumatized, but also many other things. So some of the conditions that children are typically labeled with, like attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, oppositional defiant disorder, conduct disorder, autism spectrum disorder, all of those like diagnostic labels, a child who presents with them would be appropriate for play therapy. The one place where I really see it not being appropriate is if a child is showing some symptoms of psychosis. That's the only place that I really see it not being appropriate for. And also I would add in that play therapy works really, really well with children who have an intellectual disability, a speech delay or are challenged that way, or have a diagnosis that or the symptoms that look like something like selective mutism.
Wow, that's really interesting that there's such a wide range. I don't think I would have expected a year and a half or two-year-old to be in play therapy, but that's really incredible.
Well, it's definitely surprising, but I also think like the other part of it is, and sometimes I say this is, and I think this is part of the benefit of the podcast is if you don't work in this industry or in like a child protective industry or, you know, that kind of thing is like, sometimes you're off the hook in just because of your own experiences in knowing that there are plenty of under 4-year-olds that show up for needing therapeutic services. So yeah, it's not something that I like to talk about very much because I know it makes
right.
people uncomfortable, but that's the truth of it is yes.
Right. So if we switch this in the other direction, once someone has their child in play therapy, how are they going to know that it's starting to work or it is working?
Oh, okay, great. That's such a great question. Okay, so first of all, you need to give it time. And so I don't measure that in sessions. Sometimes parents will say to me, like, how many sessions do you think they're going to need? And I can tell you just based on the research that most people, regardless of age, regardless of if it's play therapy or another kind of therapy, it takes about 20 sessions to see change that is like lasting, that will stick, so to speak. So what you really can expect in working with children is that that because 20 sessions is typically defined as a clinical hour or just about an hour, a 50-minute session, that it might take children even longer than that. And so what I like to say to parents is instead of measuring in sessions, which when I'm working with children, I would say up until about 10, it's usually a half-hour session, is that we measure in time. So if a child has had 10 30-minute sessions, right, is like that is still only 5 hours of therapy. And so to put it in that perspective, I think allows all of us, parents and clinicians alike, to be much more patient with the process, because seeing real change in 5 hours of time is very ambitious, I should say. So there is that. The other thing is, in terms of looking for, well, is this really working? You're not looking for, like, my child was lying and now they're not lying. You're like, because that's an extreme. You're looking for like little increments of change, like you would if they were learning an instrument or if they were learning to play a particular sport or something. You're looking for like little increments. And so one of the ways that I define that to parents is I look as the clinician and the play therapist for first. By that, I mean, I'm looking for, it's the first time the child smiled. It's the first time the child made eye contact with me. It's the first time the child let me win the game. It's the first time they tried out the
right. So it's like little milestone type thing.
Yeah, yes. And one of the things that that I do, and I work really hard with the people, the other play therapists that I provide supervision and consultation with and teach to become play therapists, is looking for the pro-social. So by that, I mean, like, that's the first time the kids showed a sense of humor, the first time they used their manners, the first time demonstrated empathy. And then when we're seeing those things happen in session, going back to parents and say, look at, these are some of the things that we're seeing that are pro-social in session. Can you keep an eye out for them? And so that we're shifting the parent's gaze to look for some of those things. So the child still may be lying, but they also are now using their manners. They also now aren't throwing a temper tantrum when they get upset. So just being able to give a couple of different ways to look for change, healing, and growth.
Right. And you saying that you would have parents look out for those milestones actually leads me to my next question, which is, this is actually a parent question. Someone was wondering if you would be able to tell them what's going on in their child's session.
Ah, okay. So that's a great question. And that is somewhat going to be up to the play therapist and, like, if they think that that would help the child in their healing or hinder the child in their healing. So for me, I will say that for the most part is I don't share specifics. So by that, I mean, like, I may tell the parent, like, your child is working really hard at problem solving, at negotiating relationships, things like that. But I wouldn't say, like, in this session, your child pretended to, to force me, they pretended to force me to drink a hot cup of coffee, even though it was scalding hot. Like, I wouldn't say, something like that, unless I felt like it would allow the parent to understand something a little bit better. So in general, I speak in like themes, like the themes that your child or children are working on, and then how that can be helpful to the parent. The other thing that I will sometimes share with parents, like their child's point of view. So sometimes like, I think this is a good example. Sometimes children's play will look aggressive, right? But what they're really doing when they're acting traditionally what we would see as aggressively is they're really showing us that they're protective play. So one of the lenses that I look through is when a child is showing something that looks like aggression, like they're waving the foam noodle around and they're saying like, I'll fight you. Is that aggression or is that protection? And that shift from that child is trying to hurt someone or me to that child is trying to protect themselves really can be a helpful way for parents to understand how their child is interacting out there in the world. It actually can be a really helpful thing for also play therapists to understand, because I think we jump to aggression before looking at it through a lens of could this be protection or could it be both, right? It could be both. So
right.
Does that answer that question from your perspective, I guess? I know your hand
is asking
somebody else's question, but yeah.
Yes, definitely. And actually, the same person asked another question that kind of follows that one really well. So I know you were just talking about aggression, and this person was also wondering, are there any rules for their child in the playroom? Like, are there things that they can and can't do? What kind of boundaries do you set as a play therapist, that sort of thing?
Oh, okay. Well, there's a lot. So the kind of play therapy that I do, I should talk about this first, is primarily falls under a rubric of what's called child-centered play therapy or non-directive play therapy or humanistic play therapy. Those are all forms of a very similar kind of play therapy. So regardless of what kind of play therapy, if I was doing play therapist led play therapy, there still would be limits and boundaries in all kinds. There still are in all kinds of play therapy. So none of it is a free for all. Although the non-directive, child-centered, humanistic play therapy looks a little bit more from the outside, looks a little bit more flexible and maybe even unruly because the child leads the way. That being said, the basics of this cannot happen in therapy, in play therapy, is the child cannot hurt themselves. They cannot hurt me as a therapist. And I would say those two things are true even when I'm working with adolescents and adults. Nobody can, in that therapeutic space, hurt themselves or hurt me. And the third is also true regardless if I'm doing play therapy or not, and that is, you can't do damage to the room. So you can't dump out the crayons and stomp all over them. You can't throw something at the lights or the window or the wall. So everything has to, all that integrity and safety is kept throughout the session. And what happens is if a child pushes one of those limits, right, and it becomes unsafe for the child or for the room, is that then we set a limit and give them an opportunity to do something pro-social. So let me give you an example. So if a child was about to throw a toy at the window, I would tell them they can't do that because it would make the room unsafe, but they can throw it down on the floor, or they can throw the sponge ball at the window, right? So you can't do it with that, but you can do it with this. So what you do is you create this opportunity for a child to recognize what they can't do, but also what they can do. So they start to learn without directly teaching them better choices.
Yeah, that's great. And I was also wondering, so since you were just talking about not being able to, you know, harm themselves, harm you, harm the room.
Right.
Is that like a great example of why it's better to have a child come into an office setting rather than a play therapist going to someone's home?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, there are certain situations where that can't be avoided, and we can work, you know, we can certainly work with them. But when it's their own turf, it's a little bit more challenging, you know, to do that. And also, like, there may be some things that I have a great example. I was doing a virtual play therapy session during COVID with a little girl that I had already worked with in the office and whatnot. And in the therapeutic playroom, we have water and kids can play with water. It's like a non-issue. So this little girl in her home session, she was using a bunch of pots and pans and things like that from the kitchen. And she went and filled up one with water. Well, she was doing her session in her bedroom and then I guess had spilled the water. And so after the session, the mom was like, she's not allowed to have, you know, water in there again, which I absolutely understand as a parent, but it just means like that there's, you know, it can just be a little bit confusing, especially if a child is used to the nature of the playroom where like those aren't typically things that we sweat so much in the playroom, and we don't have to because it's not our kids and it's not our house and we're only working with them a limited time. But that is one of the reasons why office-based or setting-based can be better for both children and the play therapist themselves.
Right. Yeah, the limitations would be totally different, and I'm sure that would be confusing to a child to go from one to the other.
Yeah, like how come
for sure.
But, and also like how come, like one of the things that we do in child-centered play therapy is that children can say anything. And so we don't limit the words that they use. We don't get a lot of kids who take us up on using swear, cuss words, but the words like drunk and penis and, you know, words I hate you that they typically can't say. But when a child is doing a home-based session and there's rules about at home, you know, stupid is a bad word, but in play therapy, it's not, those things can be really confusing. There are strategies for play therapists, you know, that I've suggested around that and I teach around that, but it still can be kind of confusing for the child.
Do you have any confusion in the same respect? If kids are allowed to use certain words in the playroom and then they go home and are, you know, not allowed to use those words, do you have a lot of parents that are have a lot of questions and concerns about that?
Yeah. So I've only been doing this 30 years, Faye, and
only 30.
Only 30. And that has been, you know, something that parents have mentioned before. Like if they can say anything in there with you, they're going to use those words at home. And I am not kidding. That has literally never happened. And here's why. Because I think kids understand that there are different rules when they come to Jody's play therapy room than there are when they are in school, than there are when they are at grandma's, than there are when they are, you know, when they are out with mom and dad, when they are home with mom and dad or mom and mom or, you know, whatever, is that I think that children really understand that there are different rules in different places. I do tell parents who are worried about that, if that ever happens, let me know. What it is me just reminding their child that they can say anything in their time with me, but that's the only place where they can say any word. Otherwise, they have to follow the rules of the places they are at. And I think that in and of itself just demonstrates, one, the power of the playroom, but two, also should be something that parents look at as a strength of their child, that their child can discern, oh, same thing with Jody, but when I'm in my classroom, I don't use all the words that I use with Jody.
Right. I know we only have like a minute left, so I just wanted to see if maybe you could give me a quick summary of what you would say to a parent if they're wondering why they should bring a child to a play therapist when they already play at home.
Okay. So the play of play therapy, although may look somewhat like the play at home is that I am trained to be able to communicate in the language of play as a play therapist. And it gives enough of a buffer for a child to work out things that they are going on with parents or at home. And I am not affected by them because it's the child about the relationship that I have with them and things that are close to me.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Jody. That was perfect.
Thank you, Faye. Talk soon.
Talk soon.